This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning. This episode contains the three A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned.
Imagine waking up and getting ready for school. It's an ordinary day, like the rest. Routine, even. As you sit in class, you are startled by what sounds like gunfire. Now imagine you're 911. Listening to radio traffic, calling out shots fired at the school. You hope that it is the drill. But as you begin to hope, your phone lines light up, and you and your partner know this is not a drill. This is what it's like within the trenches. In this episode, you will hear stories from the IN911 movement, a movement I started to fight the reclassification of dispatchers from clerical to protective and bring awareness to the types of calls that 911 dispatchers answer on a daily basis. This is a live audience episode, and we're recording live from Louisville, Kentucky, for the 2018 Kentucky Emergency Services Conference. Now, you heard the warning at the beginning, but I must warn you again and add that if you suffer from PTSD or have suicidal tendencies, you are listening at your own risk. The stories you're about to hear are all true and come from the dispatchers who live them. While some stories have a good outcome, the majority are horrifying. This is our reality. Your worst day is our everyday. So let's start with a bang. I want you to imagine each story, become the dispatcher who has taken each call, and imagine listening.
I walked you through the birth of your baby. I listened to you fighting for your last breath. I sent you hope when you lost your dearest loved one of 50 plus years and heard such tremble in your voice. I helped you give CPR to your baby and hear him or her start to cry, and we rejoiced together. I've also taken the call where your child stopped breathing in the middle of the night with no chance of survival at all. I've taken calls from friends and family looking for you that you might harm yourself. I knew you were already gone, and had they have called a few moments sooner, you might not have done it. We could have possibly found you and got you the help that you needed. Unsure of what to say, I was there every way that I could be. I stayed on the phone with you when someone had broken into your residence, keeping you calm and safe when in reality I was just as scared for you. I tried to talk you through your situation, but you had already made up your mind that you were done with life. I also talked to others who were seeking help and listened, and I promised them that life wouldn't always be so hard. They changed their mind and got the help they needed. I've put together profiles for missing and endangered, old and young, knowing all of their situations. I've even volunteered to search for some after hours with a burdened heart to find them. I do my best to keep my responders safe with a heart for their service and safety. I give my best every time I come through the door to provide the best service to every single person I talk to, no matter who you are. I could give 1,000 situations, and so can my fellow dispatchers, but no matter what, we're there for you. I'm 911, and we are 911.
Thank you very much. There you go. Who has a story? Don't be afraid. This is why we're here. This is something that, you know, used to plague me a lot when I was in dispatch, not sharing, not talking. You know, that stigma that if you share a story or if you talk to somebody, you're weak. And that's not what it is. We need to face those stories and move on from there. Because believe it or not, once you share one of these stories, something that you might have been holding in, or just listening to other people share these stories, your own start to come back. And I know I've noticed that when talking to my family, even now that I've been out of dispatch for 5 years, I'll be telling them about, you know, some stuff that happened in dispatch, and I'll say a story and I'll stop and think, damn, where was that one hidden? Because I had lost that one. I didn't know about that one. You know, one of the other things that has come from this, the whole movement, the stories that have been shared, I was told once that I'm probably never going to know the impact that this has been on just anyone, not even just dispatch, but the public. And I say this because I got a message once from someone who, she said, you know, I just want to let you know that you're never going to know the impact that this has done. Shit. You know, how do you respond to that, you know? I said thank you, but, you know, exactly, you know, what do you say to that? Just, I'm glad we was able to help. I'm glad that everyone sharing their stories was able to help you as well during that time. You know, there wasn't even a phone call. It wasn't someone calling for help that way, but someone reaching out for help and reading those stories. And somehow, dispatch still saved a life there. How crazy is that?
And before I start, I just want to say there's no way I'm going to get through this without breaking down. But so bear with me. First, I want to tell a little bit about what the podcast has done for me. I walk a lot, and especially Imagine Listening. People have seen me blubbering around the walking track many times, I'm sure, listening to this. So the story I want to tell, over 20 years ago, I took your call, your 8-year-old son. Had fallen into a pond. He was not breathing. At that time, we did not do EMD. You were screaming, "Help me, what do I do?" At that time, the only answer I had was, "Hang up and I'm going to have the ambulance that's on the way call you to try to help you." There's not a day that I don't hear your screams. But that has driven me. It has and will always be my mission at my center and beyond that no one calling 911 will ever have to hear that. That you'll get help from us. I'm 911.
Thank you for sharing. Hard stories. Powerful stories, though. These stories are helping many, many people out there. And believe it or not, your stories that you're sharing, they're helping other dispatchers who have either dealt with a situation like that or might deal with something that later on. There have been a lot of people who have sent in messages saying, you know, I thought I was the only one. I thought I was the only one dealing with something like this. I felt alone this whole time. I can't tell you how many messages have come in from dispatchers saying that they feel alone. However, listening to stories like the one you shared, all the other ones that are part of this movement, and Imagine Listening, they're not feeling alone anymore. And those who have come to this session, listening to people's stories, not feeling alone. But how crazy is it that so many people feel alone? What are we not doing in our centers to help a lot of these people out? You know, one of the things I hope in doing this, kind of a tour that I'm on right now, going to all these different conferences and doing this session, my hope is that either supervisors or trainers or even directors that come to this see what their dispatchers are holding in, and that, you know, some of them are finally able to release this by sharing and helping. But after you share the story and heal, so to speak, because that's kind of what we're doing here in sharing these stories, in a way we're healing. We're getting some sort of closure from that by talking it out and having other people listen who come from the same place. But once we do that, Where do we go from there? How do we continue helping our dispatchers get the help that they need to continue healing? So it's my hope that in doing this and more people that listen to it, that they realize there's a lot more that needs to be done. Because if you think about it, a few years ago, PTSD and dispatch, health and wellness, a lot of that was very minimal. There wasn't a lot of it out there. And then all of this happens, and people are seeing it more and more and more. And more people are trying to rise up, and they're sharing their stories. They're getting more help for their dispatchers. They're sending them to, you know, different trainings, different counselings, and all types of things. And it's good. It's not bad. It's, for a long time, I think we were not allowed to feel. Well, it's about damn time. And it's happening. And it's happening in front of everyone. And it's a good thing. And you know, it doesn't even have to be a hard story. This could be a save. We're gonna do the funny part in a minute, but it could be a save, something that you're proud of. That too is an IM 911 story. You know, I remember one time where I was taking this call from a frantic mother, and some of you may have heard this one before, but she was freaking out because all of her kids were sledding down the hill. They had a huge pond. The youngest was the one who got the furthest, which if I was the youngest and got the furthest from all of my siblings, I would think that was awesome. However, the little girl, this is wintertime, and it's on thin ice. And she slides all the way to the middle of the pond. And the mom doesn't want to go out there to try to retrieve her because she doesn't want her to break through and her go in. So she's hysterical on the phone with me, and I'm trying to keep her calm. We've got everyone headed out there, and I did a good job. You know, I kept her calm. I was able to get her out of the way and let them do what they were doing, and they saved the little girl. I don't know how they did it, but they did it. They got her out of there, and everything was good. It was a save. It was a good day. You know, one of the rare moments in 911 when you have a good day, or a good call for that matter. Well, a few days later, my supervisor at the time is reading the local newspaper, and she goes, "Who took this call? Who took this call?" And I said, "Well, what call? I'm on phones right now, and I have been for the last few days." And I said, "You're reading the newspaper, so that's probably not good. I don't know if I want to say it was me, but it was probably me." And it was the family. They had put out a little ad thanking everyone, and they thanked dispatch. I still have that. I have that clipping at home. One of those rare good moments.
At our center, we're working up to EMD. Until recently, we were working off equipment from the 90s, so we're kind of updating our equipment, and then we'll be moving into EMD in the future. I'm already EMD certified. However, Kentucky mandated for telephone CPR to, you know, go live, and we went live on a Sunday. My first day back was on Monday. So I asked my supervisor, because I wanted to be prepared, you know, in case I get a call, this is what I do. And all we have is this little piece of paper that's taped to a desk. I said, "I'm just going to read it in this format, you know." "Yeah, that's all you got to do." I don't think it had been an hour or two, and we get two 911 calls, and both the people who answered were actually on the non-emergency lines, but we answered to help out. My partner was talking with someone at this address and said that a woman had fainted. And when I got my rebid for a phase two, I recognized that it was at the same location that she was already talking to somebody. We had already sent an ambulance, you know, code 3, they're on the way. I just keep hanging on, and this man comes on the line. Finally, you know, after no one had answered me at all, it was just an open line. And he said, "She's not breathing, she's not breathing. I need you to walk me through CPR." And I mean, so, you know, reading it down the list, and we go through it, and I'm totally separated from the situation. I can't see if he's doing it right. You know, I'm just trying to do my best. And I can hear when the fire department gets there, and they hook her up to the AED, and they shock her, and they get her back on the first shock. And A few days later, I find out that she was in her 30s. She was tying her four-year-old shoes when she just went down. She is now home. From what I understand, she is doing fine. So.
It's one of those rare moments that you can say that there was a save there. You know, when I started out dispatching, I had this 40-hour class that they had given for beginners, and I don't know if the stat is the same today, but what the guy told us was that when you're giving CPR, there's a 5% chance that you're going to bring them back. So that was back in 2001. So again, I don't know how that is now, because of course technology is a lot better and there's AEDs and all kinds of stuff. But that was the stat in 2001. There's that 5% chance that you're going to bring them back.
My story is a little different. Little backstory. I'm a supervisor right now, and about 20 years ago, I was a dispatcher. I was lucky. Unlike all of you all, I never experienced a traumatic incident. Most of them were silly or funny, and I hung up and laughed my butt off at everybody that called in. So once I became a supervisor, it was all good. I supervised a group of people I never met before because we had merged, and we had one fella. He was a call taker. We got along great. He liked sci-fi. I did. We talked a lot, and so unfortunately, because we do take a lot of calls, I always had to have that long talk. Look, you're spending way too much time. You're trying to make a friend, and I appreciate it, but we've got calls to answer. You have to be a little bit more concise and get off the phone and help the next person. And I'd had that call, or had that talk with him. And then probably maybe a month or two later, I had to call 911, but I didn't. I was being carjacked, sort of, I guess, is what they sent it up as. And because I am 911, I could not call 911. Oh my God, that would be silly for a supervisor to call 911. But also because I'm a supervisor, I had the non-emergency line on speed dial. So I called it and I got the dispatcher, or the call taker. And, I didn't even really realize who I was talking to at first. He knew me, obviously, because he knows my voice. We'd had many discussions. So he started asking me all these questions. I told him what was going on. There was three guys. They approached my car. One of them opened my passenger side, and the other one opened up my driver's side door. And at the time, I also worked part-time, so I had a uniform. It was a flight suit. I worked for Air Medical Communications Center, and I had my flight suit in my passenger seat, and I heard one of them say, "Oh my God, she's a cop," which, you know, I don't know how they got that blue flight suit mixed up with a police uniform. But anyways, they took off, and by that time, I called, and I got the dispatcher, and the first thing, he got my location, and then he started asking questions. What did they have a gun? Did they, what color clothes? And I'm 911, and I know that's what they need, and I could not produce that for him. I could not give him any information. It was so, my experience trying to get carjacked was so just, I could not believe it, and I couldn't remember nothing. And so he was like, "Calm down." You know, he was calming me down, and I was shaking, kind of like I am now. And so, anyways, I feel really bad because he said, "I'm going to stay on the line with you. I know it's not an emergency because they've already left, but I'm going to stay on the line with you. You need me, and you can write me up later." I felt so bad, and so I changed the way I looked at the phone calls when I would listen to those phone calls. And he was right, though. In training, I was safe. They had fled because I was a policeman, supposedly. But he stayed on the phone with me, and that's what I needed as a civilian, but not what I needed as a 911 supervisor. So for those that are sharing their stories, I apologize, but I do appreciate you, because sometimes you do have to stay on those non-emergency lines with folks that are afraid to call 911 because they may think that their silliest story too as well. So, because I know a lot of people do call, you know, and I have people that tell me, and I hear calls, they'll say, I don't know if I'm supposed to call 911, but this guy almost hit somebody on the interstate because he was drunk. And so, thank you. And I felt really silly.
That's good. Thank you.
Well, I work in a small peace help, which actually became a blessing in this particular incident. But I received a 911 call. No one on the other end, nobody talking. I did get a phase two location, but it was sort of in the middle of nowhere in a wooded area, not really close enough to associate with an address. The call got disconnected. And as I was doing my due diligence to call the number back and try to make contact, and it was going to voicemail. Meanwhile, my partner, who was just right there, he receives a 911 call. And there's somebody on there hollering, help me. But he didn't get a phase two location on it. And he, of course, he turns it to me, you know, eyes, you know, wide open. And there was somebody wanting help, but and then they hung up, and I don't know where they're at. I said, what number? What was the phone number? So he gave the phone number, and it was the same number I had. I said, well, hey, I think I've got a location on that. So we started sending deputies out there to try to figure out, you know, what was going on. Well, as they got out there, they got to thinking of some possibilities as of where it could be associated with. And anyway, bring it to its conclusion, when they got out there, we had to get some firefighters out there. They did find out that there was someone, an older gentleman that was not at home and should have been. And they got out there, and he was on a tractor that had turned over in a ravine, and he was pinned under the tractor in a muddy, boggy area. It's a miracle that the phase two location even got out from there. And they were able to get him out. He did have some damage to some legs, but, you know, he's still alive and well today. And that's one time that being a small peace help came in handy, because I could imagine if it was a larger area, how would the left hand know that the right hand was dealing with the same call?
Thank you for what you said. You gave me a little courage to share the story. I talked to Ricardo about it a little bit yesterday. For those of you in here who've had me in the academy or had me at DLCJT, I share it with the academy a little bit. I was a young, cocky dispatcher. Really didn't understand the job I was doing and the impact I had on people. And some of it was fun. The excitement was fun. But I took a call at 2:00 in the morning from a guy on the it was Sunday morning, Saturday night, working third shift. And he was our local guy that was mentally ill. He called up and told me that he was going to a certain church and that he was going to tell the congregation that he was Jesus. And he wanted two troopers to go with him to escort him. And I thought it was funny. And I thought it would be funny to call him by his name and say, well, if you're Jesus, what do you need two troopers for? I talked to him for a few minutes, and I hung up. I go home, I go to bed. I come back in that evening, and I realized that he did what he said he was going to do. He went to that church, and not only did he go to that church and do that, I caused two police officers to have to use force on him, hurt him. And it took me a long time to realize anything I say on the phone, good, bad, positive, my mood affects their mood, which in turn puts those responders in that danger. And one of the things, and I think some of the folks in here have heard me say this probably, is I've probably been guilty of getting as many officers in a fight as I have been getting them out. And the more I matured and I realized that everything I said, the way that I said it, the interactions that I had with these folks could either calm them down or rile them up. And the more mature I got, the better I got at that. And I can't stress enough that when we're to that burnout stage that we don't care anymore and we get there, Everything that we say, the tone of our voice, all that stuff impacts that call and the safety of that responder, and we have to realize that. And thank you for sharing that with us, because exactly, he realized he needed you and he needed to stay on the phone with you. And sometimes we forget why we do this job. I used to ask the academy students, why do you do this? And it's to help people. And then all of a sudden we become callous to those same people we're helping and rude to those folks because of the stress of this job, and we have to realize that, and this helps us share those stories and remember why we do that.
So we have just a little bit more time for just a couple more stories. If anyone has one or two stories to share.
Okay, so I don't really know anybody in here except for the other blue shirts. I've been dispatching about 11 years. And a running joke, no matter what the call is, what I give out, my voice doesn't change. And one of the officers is like, you could give out a stray dog running up the road, or you could give out, you know, a mass shooting at Walmart, and we're never going to know till you say it. I was at the agency that I worked at before. I'd been there. I'd been dispatching right at 4 years. And we had the worst week ever. It was the first week of June. It was the week of the fair. It was the last night of the county fair. We had 3 fatalities that week. And earlier that day, a pipe down at dam had exploded. So we flew 2 people out there. It was a bad week. I was stressed. Usually you work by yourself. It's a smaller agency. That night, there were 2 of us there, thank God. And the phone rang, and girl I was with answered it, and I could hear this man screaming on the other end of the phone. And couldn't really get anything out of him, but we got the face to. And about that time, the other line rang, and I answered it, 911, where's your emergency? And all I could hear was this noise. I couldn't figure out what it was. I kept saying, hello, hello, can you hear me? It was just this noise, and you could tell it was somebody, but you couldn't tell what it was. So I stayed on the line. The phase 2 hit came in. It was the same place. So, finally gets out of the guy on her phone that his daughter and his niece were playing in the driveway, that a church bus had just dropped them off from a birthday party. And as the bus was leaving, it backed over both the girls. And what I was hearing was somebody else there that had called 911 and dropped the phone. And I was hearing the little girl. And about the time I realized what I was hearing, you know, everybody's on the radio hollering, and I'm answering, and I don't know what I sounded like on the radio. I don't have any idea. But it was bad enough that one of the deputies came down to check on me. I just kept crying. And I could hear her die. And he said, what you didn't hear was the other little girl that the helicopter got to because you called them, and she lived. And they were the same age as my kids. You know, I was married to a cop. And I was working the night he had to shoot somebody. He had to use lethal force. And somebody said, so how did you like working your worst night dispatching? And I was like, that wasn't my worst night. He was fine. All the other guys were fine. I was fine. I said, that wasn't my worst night. I was like, you don't even know. So every time we have to fly somebody out, I can still hear that call. And I don't guess I've ever told that whole story, ever. And I probably won't again, so I hope y'all enjoyed it, girls. Don't take that back to work, please.
Thank you. I'm glad you were able to share the entire story. You know, being here with people who come from where you come from, and those that are there with you in blue, that your family, that's good. There are a lot of people who have shared stories in the past who have said the same thing, that being in a room like this with a bunch of people that come from where they come from, they're able to share. Thank you so much for sharing that. It's hard. It's very hard. But these are powerful stories that I swear to you will help not only you for sharing that, but others who listen to that as well. They will not feel alone.
Those are just a few stories from Imagine Listening, an extension of the podcast featuring the stories of the I Am 911 movement. These stories came from the amazing 911 professionals from the state of Kentucky. Thank you so much for attending my session and for sharing a glimpse into your 911 experience. There's much more to come. This is episode 213, and I have episodes all the way through 220 to post. So stay tuned.